Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. I know you watched the speech last night as well as I did, and that was a chore for me because I generally don't enjoy watching those speeches and didn't enjoy really attending, I have to confess, you know, even when I was in the Congress, because they were so ritualistic and so canned. But I did listen to it last night, and a lot of other people did, and I thought it was important because in a way it is a historic speech. Things are different now. Conditions are so bad. People are very angry. It's a worldwide event, and people are very hopeful that since Trump is different, that he would come up with some answers, and there's still a lot of optimism there. And today, the stock market is at super record high, so everything superficially looks like it's going quite well. But you know, I listened carefully, did a little tweeting last night, and tried to get the perspective from a libertarian, you know, out there, because that, of course, has been my goal for many, many decades. I've never been somebody that I thought I was even running for office to enhance a typical republicanism or typical economic policies that we've had. I want to always see change. So I was anxiously, wanting to listen carefully and see what kind of good things I could find and maybe gently but firmly criticize the things that I think are going in the wrong direction.
You know, and I think everyone saw your tweets, and people have commented on them. Bob Wenzel commented on them. And then I looked at all the comments under your tweets, and I think a lot of people missed the point, which was, as you said, you were tweeting as a libertarian. Yes or no is what he said, libertarian. So people said, oh, you know, Ron, get with the program, you know, or why are you always bashing? It's not about bashing Trump. It's about the principles that he pointed out. So I pulled up a few of your tweets to put you on the hot seat. You got to defend
okay.
them. And as usual, when you go down the rabbit hole, let's start with the end. Start with the conclusion. And if we can actually, let's put a couple of things up here. Your final tweet was your final grade. Final grade on the libertarian scale, plan strategy F, overall D minus. You also had another little report card where you said his vision for the U.S. at the 250th anniversary, A minus. His methods to achieve it, an F.
See, that's a mixed bag, because I loved his conclusion of his goals, because in a way, very similar to what I would like to see. I imagine there aren't very many Americans could listen to his goals on what we should have in America, you know, coming together in a healthy economy and everybody getting what they need in peace. He didn't say we need more war or any of these things. So I would say that is was a wonderful statement, and that's why he got an A for that. But I think that whole thing, that issue has existed for a long time, because I think the whole time I was in Congress, that was the goal of most people. I've never heard somebody come up, I want to create unemployment. The whole thing boils down to, what are your policies? What are you doing? Are you changing it? Or how do you achieve this? But if we can agree on the goal, then it's back in the court of everybody involved. I think most important are the ideological issues, the philosophic positions that we take that make the difference, because that translates into what the politicians do. So this to me was the most important, and I just didn't hear the things necessary, you know, and sometimes things change. I know that he wants to lower taxes, and that certainly is good, but you know, if you don't cut spending, what if the debt goes up? Will we rely on the will we rely on the Federal Reserve to print the money? And of course, that is the case. So I didn't find a lot of changes in great detail, even the things on foreign policy where I had been more hopeful. I thought he was backing away a little bit, and he wasn't as anxious to be befriend his brother, he didn't mention Russia. He didn't mention the Federal Reserve. You know, he didn't mention a lot of things that I thought are crucial. And I guess one thing from a libertarian viewpoint is that the main purpose of government for a libertarian is the protection and the recognition of individual liberty and the rejection of the non-aggression principle, where nobody can commit aggression, including the government. See, that just seems to be a great distance from almost every Republican and every Democrat. Not every Republican, because we know a few that understand this, but basically what we look at is pragmatism, which fits into utilitarianism and economic policy. You do whatever the whim of the day is. If you have a problem here, do this, and not looking at it from a philosophic long-term approach. So therefore, I didn't see, wow, this is great. Libertarianism was on the rise. I happen to believe libertarian is on the rise, and that things are doing very well outside of the political structure. And that's the most important place anyway, where people, and especially young people, now are starting to understand what libertarian is all about. And that's where I'm encouraged. But I didn't hear it last night. That, to me, was disappointing. We should talk more about exactly how we can reach those goals that he so clearly stated what we should be striving for in this country.
So in short, it's not about you like him or you hate him. You know, it's about the issue. That's the philosophy. He looked good, great suit. I think he gave a very smooth speech. You know, he was the rough edges seemed to be, you know, honed down a little bit.
And the establishment liked him, you know, more. I mean, otherwise the markets wouldn't be soaring. You know, his approach, he wasn't as, he wasn't chewing out the media, you know, and he wasn't looking for a fight. He was truly trying to have a presentation which was more accommodating. And so if you take that away from real policy, then you say, well, he looked better, and it looks like he wants to talk to people. But that, again, is, yes, you talk to people if you can agree on the right ideas.
Well, speaking of ideas, let's look at a few things that you pointed out in the speech, and this is not in chronological order. We just sort of put a few of them up here to talk about what he said and where you might have some differences. Let's look at the next one if we can. Great wall on the southern border, which is something he talked about, hopefully not to keep us in. Reduce incentives to illegally cross and change foreign policy. Problem solved. This is the immigration issue, of course.
Yes, I would think a good libertarian, when you talk about walls, they'd be very hesitant. Why is there going to be a wall? There is a problem, but maybe the problem of a symptom of the real problem. And I think that's what immigration is all about, and the walls are all about the problems that we have, and it's a symptom, and it can be scapegoated and said everything is, you know, due to immigrants coming in. That doesn't mean that I take a position that we shouldn't have, you know, watch who's coming in, but just building a wall, practically, I think it's not likely to happen. The costs are going to be skyrocketing, and all the practical reasons why it's not likely to happen. But the whole idea of having a wall just doesn't make sense. But what doesn't make sense to me is, why don't we look at why we have so much immigration? And Trump said a little bit about this, and that is improve the environment here for business people so our economy is better, because we wouldn't be so resentful of somebody coming in. A truly free market and a good economy, you need people to come in because you're always looking for more labor. But instead, we mess up the economy, people come in, conditions are much worse in Central and South America, they come in, but we also now we put the American people in jeopardy. They're having a tough time. So we take from them either inflation or debt or taxes in order to give a subsidy to the people who come in and say, well, you come in and we guarantee you your rights and your right to an education and free medical care and a job and all of this. And so it's an incentive for them to come. Then you also have to talk about why is there a need for vetting? Well, maybe some bad guys are coming in. There's people who are angry at us. Why are they angry at us? They weren't angry at us, you know, for decades, but they're angry at us now, especially in the last 15 years, because we've been invading their country. We've been bombing them. So that's why I mentioned two things, no incentives and change our foreign policy. And I might not be so bold to say all problems are solved with the click of your fingers, but I'll tell you what, it would solve a lot of our problems, go a long way if we just had a different approach and not get distracted by finding a scapegoat and said a wall is going to solve our problem and then become almost obsessed with this wall. And I just don't think that's an answer to very much.
Now you sound like a doctor. You want to treat the disease and not the symptoms.
Yeah.
We have another one now, if we can get it up here. He talked about infrastructure a lot. $1 trillion he wants to spend for infrastructure. But as you point out, the treasury is empty. No money in the bank. The answer, probably just print more. Same old, you said.
And this is very, very popular. So if you're a politician that needs to worry about the next election, you don't want to challenge that because you're getting Democrats in on this. The Democrats love this. Infrastructure, you know, very good. But there is no money in the bank. If he does it and the people go along with it, they're going to have to borrow the money. And if there's not enough money out there to borrow, they'll just print the money. And I think the infrastructure should be looked at, but I don't think it was ever meant to be a federal government involvement. Matter of fact, they cite, because of this talk, we haven't done this since Eisenhower. It's interesting that when Eisenhower wanted to do this, he built these superhighways, which we all, you know, enjoy. But the whole thing is that he recognized that he didn't have the constitutional authority to do it. That was back in the old days, you know, they didn't have the authority to prohibit the drinking of alcohol, so they amended the Constitution.
Yeah.
Back then, Eisenhower had to, at least on the surface, look like he was paying attention to the Constitution. So he says, this is for national security reasons. And, and everybody knows that was just the excuse. That argument is not going to come up, but it's assumed that the federal government is going to take care of the highways. But it is going to be part of the problems that we face when the dust settles. The deficit, I believe, unless we have some miracle happen, is going to explode. And this will be one reason, because this is one thing is bipartisan. You know, the Republicans are going to love this. The Democrats are going to love this. The Democrats will vote for it. The Republicans get to distribute the money, pass out the money first to their friends, and this sort of thing. So I think it's another political tool that is used to get more political power and political support, but it has nothing to do with solving our problems. Matter of fact, I think unless you deal with the deficit and where that money comes and how it harms our economy and the future generations, this is going to be very detrimental.
Hmm. Well, the next one is one of the trickiest ones, and this is one where you took a lot of criticism. And it was a poignant moment in the speech, and this is where President Trump pointed out the widow of the Navy SEAL that was killed in the Yemen raid. And this is the tweet that caused a lot of discussion on your Twitter feed, some supporting you and some others not supporting you. Warmongering is alive and well, tragically. Focus on the widow. What a terrible use of tragedy for political purposes.
Now, this is a tough one. It came up in the debates, the presidential debates, because we had, they brought a widow there of somebody who had died in the Middle East and presented the same case. And, of course, I gave the same answer that I try, you can't do it in a few words. But to me, it's so sad and so tragic to see somebody like that suffering so. And I assume that it's a tough situation for everybody, because you can't tell the truth from the political viewpoint, because the truth is he shouldn't have died.
Yeah.
You know, he shouldn't have died. We shouldn't have been there. We shouldn't have had that raid that didn't do any good. But in order to remove any guilt feeling from the people who sent them over there or a family, you know, if you say, well, this was a stupid war and he shouldn't have done it, you mean I lost my loved one?
Yeah.
So I think anti-war people are way more sympathetic in understanding this than the warmongers, because the warmongers say, this is for national defense, this is for the Constitution and liberty, and this is patriotism, and therefore, you know, it's good and wonderful. So if you're anti-war and think war should only be fought when a war is declared, to me, I think our empathy is so much greater, and yet the patriotism card is played on this. So the families, it just be horrible to accept. Not all of them do, because some of them turn and say, hey, maybe this was unnecessary. And even in this family, that might have been the case. So this to me is the other thing, the politicians who endorse the war, the Congress is responsible, the presidents, both of them are responsible for this particular raid. They can't say, we made a mistake. They can't do that. They have to build up this super support for war, even if it's an illegal, unconstitutional war. So they have to do this. And then, of course, then there's another sinister force that has to make sure that there's no criticism of this, is the military-industrial complex. They may be in for it for profits, but they sure don't want to get people thinking, well, you know, maybe these lives would be saved if we did do it. And it reminds me of a very important story, because one person that conservatives look up to, and that is Ronald Reagan. And I remember this well because I was involved in the debate and really pleading for Reagan not to put the troops in Lebanon, in Beirut, and bring them home. And, of course, the tragedy was somebody with a suicide bomb came in and killed 242 Marines. And maybe it was settled and nobody said anything. Well, they were doing their duty, protecting the Constitution and our national security. But the greatest thing that I think that Reagan did was when he wrote his memoirs, he said, you know, about the Marines being killed, he says, I made a tragic mistake. He says, I had no idea how crazy and how foolish the hatreds are in that country. Irrational is the word that he used. And he said that he should have been more neutral in that war. And he said, an unbelievable statement. He said, you know, if I'd have done the right thing, those Marines would still be alive today. Now, that is sort of the way I see things when I see people dying. You know, it just tears me up. And the person who doesn't want the war is the anti-war and have it only for strict defensive purposes. When people die, you know, we've lost 10,000 people here. So this is one example which they're played on. I think they're using people for political reasons, not in strictly an evil way. It's just that that's the way it comes together, because they believe these wars are really necessary. At least they convince most of the American people that these wars are necessary. So that to me is a tragic example of what can happen, and also one of the most difficult things, you know, to handle politically. But, you know, I had that position during the time I was running for office in Congress, and I never thought that people, and I'd go to the veteran groups and talk the same way, and I think they understood what I was talking about. And most people are anti-war, but they are so want to justify it and make an excuse for it. So that is one of the reasons why I have this position, and I understand very well why people would want to challenge it.
Yeah, they transfer the nobility of the warrior onto the nobility of the cause. It was kind of a cynical ploy, because talking about the horrors of the Yemen war is now off the table.
Yeah, and that's all, you know, like hides the whole issue. You know, look how long they had to sort it out on the Bay of Pigs and things like that, and who caused what. And right now they're still arguing, you know, was this a great raid in Yemen? You know, they're still saying, some are still saying, oh, it was good. We got a lot of information, all this. So they're hiding from the truth.
So I'll switch gears now, and this is something that was a little bit more optimistic. Reducing corporate taxes, great idea, but you must also cut spending, otherwise disaster. Well, a little praise, a little criticism there.
Yeah, I love cutting taxes. And matter of fact, my position when I had to vote, if there was a tax cut bill that came up, I would always vote for it, even if there was a chance it would raise the deficit, because taxes, no matter what, they have to be paid for. So I would always vote to cut taxes, and the deficit is, the spending is a different issue. We should be talking about spending, and that's the real culture. You know, even a balanced budget, if the budget is too high, it's still damaging, because the government's taking too much resources out of it. But now they talk about tax cuts, and then they talk about revenue neutral. You know, if they cut here, they have to raise over here, or it's not considered revenue neutral. And then there's a group of economists that the politicians love. They're pseudo-Keynesians, and they say, well, with dynamic scoring, if we cut our taxes this much, the economy, instead of growing 2%, is going to grow 4% and produce more revenues. And that's going to solve the problem. But they don't deal with that. Superficially, I agree with the people who love tax cuts. I'd vote for the tax cut. But I will continue to emphasize that the problem is big government spending, whether it's infrastructure or wars we don't need or the welfare state. It goes on and on. We need to decide one important thing. What should the role of government be? And that role should be the defense of liberty.
Okay, we'll do a final one. This is kind of your summation of the speech. You know, this is one of the last tweets you did. You said, never said audit the Fed, no spending cuts, more foreign intervention. The word liberty was not mentioned once.
That's my disappointment, because the most important thing for a government is to protect liberty. It is conceded to most politicians that they only have to talk about safety. Safety nets economically, and of course, safe from the bad guys coming to get us, rather than thinking about the purpose of government is to provide liberty, because liberty is what provides for us economically, and it is the concept of liberty and minding our own business and staying out of the internal affairs of other nations that will bring about peace. So my goal has always been, you know, to promote liberty, and believing justifiably that liberty is the solution to most of our problems, and that's what we should strive for, and that means government would be very limited. So, yes, I was disappointed in that area, because my ears perk up when they start talking about, I'm going to make you safe. Well, you know, people can be made safe if they can be turned into, protective beings, where you can be safe if you're a prisoner. You know, you can be a slave and be safe, but you don't want, safety shouldn't be the main goal. But does that mean you give up safety? No, I believe in a free society, you are going to be more safe than when the government gets involved and gets us involved in these conflicts, and they undo the economy and give us all these problems. So one mistake goes to another one. I think the basic problem is we've lost a lot of confidence in ourselves as a people. And that's why I like Trump's last statement, because when he was saying these things about how things should be on our 250th anniversary, of course, my wheels turn, and that's precisely what I think about all the time, and how would that come about? And it doesn't come about by spending more money, more militarism, more involvement overseas, print more money, support the Federal Reserve, attack civil liberties, more drug wars, all this going on. That has just the opposite of what libertarianism is all about, and it's the opposite of what I personally believe. And really, I truly believe it's essentially opposite of what the founders had hoped that we would have eventually in this country, and it's not the case. Today, we have too much government and too little concern about our personal liberties. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.